is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. We are still sheltering in place, believe it or not, and we have learned to do everything pretty much by Zoom. So by Zoom today, I have the great opportunity to interview Linda Reevely, a Tuolumne Master Gardener, past president, so many other talents, it's hard to keep track of them all. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Debbie. It's always fun to be flattered by Debbie. Thank you.
All true. And Linda, today we're going to talk about what is happening with your orchard today.
Oh, okay. I have what's basically called a small family orchard, but it has 27 trees, so it's not entirely small. And the trees are mostly apples and cherries and nectarines with a few other things. We have several different kinds of prunes and plums and a couple of peach trees and one and some interspecifics. We'll talk about those in a minute. And then pomegranate. And so they're planted very close together in rows, and we trim the trees constantly across the year to keep them small, pickable, and knitting into each other to create a strong framework to hold the fruit up so we don't have to prop them up eventually.
Linda, I just got to ask you, with your fruit trees, that's such a diversity. Are those all fruits that you like to eat? I know that sounds like a simple question.
I know. When we started planning our orchard, the first thing we did was decide what we wanted and what we like to eat. And we're absolutely crazy about cherries. And we had a cherry pie for our wedding cake.
That's great.
My husband and I. So we have several different kinds of regular sweet cherries and two pie cherry trees that have done very well for us. One is a Montmorency and the other one is, I think, let me look on my list here. One's a Morello and the other's a Montmorency. And the English Morello is a fairly large cherry for a sour cherry. And they get darker when you pick them, they're almost black. And the Montmorencies are the standard ones that people can for pies. And they're wonderful. We really love our pie cherries. Ken is a big fan of nectarines, so we put in several different nectarine trees. I love plums, especially for making jam. So we put in three plums. And this last year, we discovered that English prunes or French prunes make the most wonderful jam. So we planted one of those this year. So, and then we have two interspecifics. One is a plum cherry cross called a pleury that makes the most fruit of anything in my garden right now. This thing is just so prolific. And then the other one we planted is, let me look on my list here, I can't find it. I'll tell you later. But it's a plum apricot cross, Atrium. And it's delicious. Those make really lovely fruit. I should have that written on my list. Flavor Finale Aprium. We discovered those in a friend's orchard. They were ripe in November.
Wow.
And they were absolutely delicious. Just crisp, lovely flavor. So nice. Everything to ripen over a season. And once it had very high ratings for good flavor. And you can find all this stuff on the internet. Our trees almost all came from Dave Wilson Nurseries because they're almost a local grower. Their growing yards are in Hickman, which is just south of Modesto a ways into the east.
So, Linda, these are all fruits that you do like to eat, which is wonderful, because every once in a while, sometimes people will plant something and they go, hey, I really don't like pomegranates. Why did I do that?
I understand that plan. And the other one is you have to realize that eventually you're going to have a lot of this stuff and you have to figure out what to do with it. And, you know, I'm an old fashioned girl. I know how to can. So we chose things that we would eat canned or fresh or made into jam. And so that's what we've got going.
So when will you first get your fruit and how late will you still continue to get fruit? So when will you first expect fruit and how late will you continue to have fruit throughout the year?
We are now picking cherries. It's the middle of June, and I think that's really the first thing that we see is fruit. Our cherries, and our sweet cherries are ripening up right now. And I have Utah Giants, Lamberts, several different kinds, Lapines, Craig's Crimson, and Van.
Okay.
For sweet cherries. And they're good. They're really tasty. They're coming on like crazy right now.
When and then the pomegranates, are they a little bit later, or some of these like nectarines, when will you be able to start harvesting nectarines?
Our nectarines have been coming, we set them to go out over quite a long period. We'll get the first ones probably the middle of July, maybe to the end of July, and they go all the way into the fall. We'll still be picking them in November, early November.
Is that because you have different varieties, or
yes.
That's okay?
Chosen to ripen sequentially one after the other. Well, I also have two peach trees that ripen at the same time, but I did that because I like peaches canned. I find canned peaches, you know, they're so easy to do, and you just pop them in the freezer with the lids off, let them freeze, and then eat that stuff with a spoon. It is just like the best ice cream ever.
Linda, with all these trees, what elevation are you at?
We're about 3,500 or 2,500 here. And we chose trees. Fruit trees are pretty forgiving about latitudes across the mother lode, but there are down like where you are, down at your elevation where your house is. And they'll ripen earlier than they do here. But you can find all this information online, and you should also consult some good books. Master Gardeners, when we became Master Gardeners, are given a copy of a book called The Home Orchard, Growing Your Own Deciduous Fruit and Nut Trees. Excellent book. I found my copy finally. And it just tells you everything you need to know about practically everything. My other real standby book right now for my orchard has been Pests of Landscape Trees and Shrubs. Because it turns out we have Kuno scale on one of our plum trees.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Because getting rid of scale is really difficult. So far, Ken actually stood around and picked all of the ones he could find off the tree.
Is that the most effective way to do it?
I think it's probably the most effective way to do it. The ones you can see are female. And if you get rid of them, you tend to stop the whole thing earlier. Ultimately, we will be spraying these trees with horticultural oil to try and stop the scale.
What does the scale look like?
They're reddish brown. They're round, like little ball bearings. And they're the size of small elderberries. They're not the tiniest of scales, but they're extremely round. They're not one of those flattened out little plaque-looking scales. These are little round jobbies. So all of a sudden you just have masses of what look like drops of blood on your tree. And
oh,
it's Kuno scale. It's passed around from nursery to nursery. Apparently is the most common way to get it. Ants tend them. You always know you've got ants in the tree because there'll be ants collecting the honeydew that the scales excrete.
Okay.
So that's been a real problem, but we worked on that. The other big issue, well, two other big issues with my orchard that other people have, and the way to go about them is pretty much the same. One was we got a lot of peach leaf curl this year, a lot of it. And we know that if you leave it alone, your tree will still produce fruit and you'll still have leaves. They just look stupid. So, and it's caused by fungus. But, and we bought all the stuff to spray it. We got two sprayings in and it rained both times. So it washed the spray off, which was really super frustrating. And when the leaves came out curled from the fungus. But along came a really amazing hail, which I don't know if you guys experienced where you live, but we sure got it. One day it hailed up here so hard. And these hail were 3/8 of an inch or a little bit bigger. And it bruised up the fruit that had formed, but it also knocked most of the peach leaf curled leaves off the peach trees. So now they're kind of naked and they're growing new leaves and they're not coming out curled.
Oh, good. That's wonderful.
So in some respects, one way to manage that stuff, besides cleaning up under your trees really seriously, getting rid of all those old leaves and stuff, and certainly all any old fruit that you might have on a tree, any mummies or anything like that, or fruit on the ground, you have to clean all that up. And then you have to spray, and I understand you're supposed to spray from my master gardener training with a combination of ingredients, products that you can get at your nursery, mostly ones involving a horticultural oil and some pesticides, some fungicides. You spray at Thanksgiving, you spray just before Christmas, and you spray at Valentine's Day.
Oh, good. Now, do you have, like, I know you're growing all these wonderful trees. You've gone to all this effort. The trees are now starting to bear fruit. Can you just sit back and enjoy them, or is there anything else you have to think about?
Just about the same minute they started to produce fruit, the birds arrived. And it was terrible. We tried everything we could think of. We bought those plastic nets you can get at Home Depot or Lowe's or any of those places. And we put them over our trees. And then the next morning, we'd spend half the morning getting the birds out of the nets because they'd get up inside there somehow and still eat the fruit and then be really frustrated because they couldn't get out. And I tell you, an angry blue jay is a really hard thing to handle. We had turkeys. We had mourning doves. We have little bitty birds. We have great big birds. It was just bird central down there. So we began to look for appropriate netting. And we happened to find it in a friend's orchard that's over by Tuolumne Road. This netting we found is 100 feet wide, mind you, and however long you choose to buy it. And what it truly turns out to be is fish net. Real net for catching fish.
Okay.
And it mostly comes from China. And you have to order it online. But we bought the leftover from these people who had the other orchard and stretched this. Then we decided you can't just lay it on the trees because the trees will go through it and it'll just be an enormous mess to get back down. And you have to take it down before it snows on it because it will break the trees and everything around it with the snow load. So we entertained ourselves by putting up a giant PVC structure. Pipe, just like you use for irrigation pipe, except mounted in the ground on pieces of rebar that we pounded into the ground so that they've got support inside these pieces of pipe. This thing goes up 7 feet where it has cross braces that go clear around the entire area. And this is kind of inside the fence. My garden is fenced with a chain link fence. And it's about, I'd say 5 to 7 feet inside that fence, this structure. And then it has a new layer that takes the whole thing up to 11 feet.
Wow.
So when we want to put the netting up, we actually gather the netting up either long way or crossways, and it compresses down so that you can put your hands around the whole 100 feet of it. And we get up and we loop it over the top of the structure with the ladder until we've got it all along one long way. And then we find the corners and we unfold it and pull it out to the outside fence of the orchard where we hooked it all down with wire ties.
Wow, and that's quite a production.
It took 2 days to do it this last time. But you know, you don't always put it away in the condition you want to get it out in. And we had to untangle a fair amount of it. But it's good. It's up. It's perfect right now.
The and size it's working. Of
the orchard, it works. Okay. The chain link doesn't stop the little birdies. So we put that plastic fish netting that we'd purchased, that, you know, the bird netting that we'd purchased before to put on the trees. We put that up on the sides tight to the chain link with wire ties. And we just leave it there because the snow doesn't bother it. And so my whole orchard is now completely covered with a big net. This year, we did not catch any birds inside when we did it. Last year, we caught baby turkeys inside.
Oh my
and we had
gosh.
To go running around trying to chase them out the door. Turns out they can fly. So we just opened the net a little bit and they flew out. It was all fine. That was exciting. It was like turkey rodeo down there.
That sounds very exciting.
Hey,
Linda, you're not going to believe it, but we ran out of time again.
I believe it. Every time.
Yes.
Good
we'll
to talk
have
to you guys. Thanks, Master Gardeners.
Yes.
For all you do.
Oh, and Linda, thank you for all you do. So we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And I am sitting in our new office building here in Calaveras County, which is located right on Highway 49, right in San Andreas. And I have the great fortune to talk to Gordon Long. And Gordon Long is with the Calaveras Resource Conservation District. Hello, Gordon.
How you doing, Debbie?
Good, good. We've had a lot of fun chatting. But Gordon, the reason I'm interviewing you is a lot of people don't understand what the Calaveras Resource Conservation District is. Can you maybe explain a little bit or kind of enlighten us a little bit on it?
So the Calaveras RCD, you know, RCD for short, is a special district under the regulation of the state, which allows us to work for private landowners. We were voted in June of 2016. We were the last rural county in California to get an RCD. So that's, you know, a little surprising, but that's just how it is. One of the reasons why we were told that we hadn't had one yet was that previous attempts to get it voted on by voters had a tax associated with the passage.
Oh.
So this time around, we said, we're not asking for any public money. It's going to be all grant driven. So if people ask about the RCD, well, this is strictly, we actually go out and acquire grants separately. So we are a special district under the state, but we get no money from state or county agencies.
So how do you get your money? Because you must, just to operate, you have to have some money. Is it all through grants?
It's all through grants.
Oh, my gosh.
Right now, we get a little assistance from the California Association of RCDs. So and we've gotten, you know, maybe $2,000 over the last 2 years.
That's not very much.
That's not very much. So, yeah, we are bare bones. And right now we're in the process of getting, we've making final submittals to CAL FIRE for some pretty large healthy forest grants, which are through the carbon sequestration of the state, you know, cap and trade monies.
Oh, right.
So we have a couple of those that we're submitting, and we actually, as of 2 weeks ago, we actually got our first grant, which is through PG&E, which we're going to clear transmission lines under PG&E lines along private roads.
So you're going to clear that?
Yes, we're going to. Oh. We got money from PG&E to actually clear ground on private property.
Wow.
To pretty much, you know, enhance clearance.
Uh-huh.
Along.
That's,
for ingress,
crazy.
Egress.
What size properties? Is it limited to a certain size? Do you have to have a large piece of property in order to?
I mean, it was pretty wide open with PG&E as far as how they had it structured for the grant. So I actually ran up, and I grew up in District 2 around West Point.
Okay.
And I know that West Point's underserved part of Calaveras County.
Yes.
And I also know that there's a lot of forest issues up in that elevation belt.
Sure.
So I went up and I just started looking at roads which could use some help. and elected state highways, county roads, and then also private roads. And what we're actually looking at now is focusing on private association roads that don't get any county help
My gosh, that's
or
great.
state help.
I'm sure there's some out there that can use some help.
There are, and these are, part of the wildland urban interface, the WUI, if you know
Okay.
that term. So these are little subdivisions that are little are homeowner
Maybe can you
associations.
explain that? I mean, there's a lot of acronyms that kind of float around.
Right, so WUI is a big term now because it's talking about the fuel reductions where you have the wildlands, which is typically natural habitat, forests, butt up against the homes. So we're talking anywhere from quarter acre up to 5 acre, 20 acre parcels that have homes on it. And so, as we know from the Butte Fire of 2015 and the Rim Fire from 2013 and such, is that if these fires become big enough, they just run right through homeowner associations and private residences. And so there's a big push now for the state and counties to try to make fire clearances in these WUIs, because that's where people are living. People are living out in, they moved to Calaveras, to Tuolumne, to Aramunor County to be out in the forest. But when a fire starts, they're also in the path of a fire. So that's important that we go in there and try to make some defensible space.
And how large is a defensible space?
Well, we're kind of going along with what Cal Fire's told us.
Okay.
They want 100 feet defensible space and no vegetation within 30 feet of the roof line. In essence, I mean, anything that's got any height to it, if you, ground cover is fine, but you don't want anything that has any ladder fuel capacity, because you don't want a fire getting to some brush, and then that would maybe get toward your house.
That's huge. And after the Butte Fire, I'm sure everybody's probably pretty sensitive to that and trying to make sure that their houses are safe.
And now, with the Butte Fire, and then we start getting the beetle infestations, where we're getting the dead trees, and now they're starting to fall. So, I was just going down, if you've ever been down Ponderosa Way, going down into the Mequalamy Canyon, they've got a road that a public road going down there. Yeah, it goes all the way down the Mequalamy there at Robinson Hill up Highway 26. But when I walked down there, within 2 weeks, like five trees had fallen over crossing the road.
Oh my gosh.
So these trees, and these are Butte Fire trees, so these are 2.5 year old trees, and they are really starting to fail.
Oh gosh.
So that's pretty important for public safety, to try and get some of these trees down on the ground before they strike something that we don't want it to strike.
I'm sure there's a lot of trees that are still up that are in a bad condition.
Right. So there again, so much of our work, because the RCD is pretty much a local version of the Natural Resource Conservation Service, that we are grant driven, so therefore we are working on practices that directly impact landowners. And right now, the forest issue and with fires is probably the biggest issue that we're addressing currently.
That's a huge issue. So are you thinking out into the future, are there some other issues that you're going to try to address, or are you just going to stay primarily focused on this one right at this time?
Boy, it's, I think, we've had a unnatural fire suppression program in the state for so long that it's going to take years before we can get our forest back in shape. So it's going to be, I mean, we're always looking at anything that could help landowners that would consider, but right now this is probably the first and foremost thing on everybody's minds.
Now, do you also give advice to landowners? I mean, as far as is there a way for them to call in and ask you questions on how they can improve things or
Oh,
keep it safer?
we're always available, but there again, that's what UC Extension is for.
That's true. But we're always just looking for partners to help out.
Right. And I am a certified wildlife biologist.
Okay.
So, I do wildlife side of things, and I can say I've become a little more of an expert on forests in the last, three or four years. But, I am wildlife oriented.
Okay.
In my profession.
And then you have kind of an interesting background because you grew up, didn't you, on a Christmas tree farm in West Point?
In West Point.
So you're right. So you've got that background of growing and taking care of trees and I mean, that sounds like a wonderful way to grow up, by the way.
Oh, we enjoyed
it. I'm a little jealous.
Well, I grew up. My dad was a wildlife biologist too, and so he got in the business and we moved to West Point and we built a Christmas tree farm up, and I followed in his profession. I always figured I'd work for my father, but he said, you still need a degree. So I went to Cal Poly and got my biology degree.
Was he right?
He was. So
oh, gosh.
I got my degree in biology and went to work for him. And now, you know how sometimes you can't foresee the future, and I've gotten involved in, the RCDs, and it's, the RCDs, I think, serves an important role in counties if we're viable, and we're trying to make that the Calvert RCD a viable, entity in Calvert.
And I'm sure an RCD is different for every county. Maybe they're responding to the needs within a particular county. The RCD, what you do here in Calaveras County, is going to be different than maybe what an RCD does in Shasta County, or a different county.
Definitely. And that's the nice thing about RCDs, the fact that they are very, locally oriented.
Right. So they're going to focus on what the needs are for the particular landowners in their county.
And since we're a new one, we don't have a lot of backing. But like I said, our budget is pretty much very
slim.
But you go to some other counties, I mean, and many counties have a tax base.
I didn't realize that.
Actually, most of them probably do have a little bit of tax base.
And the taxes, is that paid out of property taxes?
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
Okay.
I mean,
and that helps fund the program so that they're able to do greater benefits for landowners.
Right. I mean, it would be nice to think that but hey, we're dealing with the hand we're given, and we said if we get a couple of these pretty large grants, which we are very confident we will, and we're well on our way to be a very viable district here.
And so you must be a really wonderful grant writer.
I'm learning. I am learning.
And I know this sounds really obvious, but how are you the only person in the RCD program here in Calaveras County, or is there somebody else involved, or how many people are involved?
So the RCD started out with a board of 7 members.
Okay.
With no staff. So just a board. So we got elected.
And are these volunteers?
Yes, they're all volunteers. I mean, we had no money. So,
right.
So the board of supervisors had the authority to nominate and name directors.
Okay.
And I chose to apply to become a board member, and I was appointed. And so there were 7 board members, and then once we started getting moving along, I saw maybe there was a chance to actually start writing grants and actually maybe help my profession and actually turn this into a job.
Right.
So then I resigned from the board and became the volunteer executive director for the RCD.
Wow.
So then that pretty much, then if we get grants, then I can actually get paid through the grant to administer the grant.
Right.
But the way the RCDs work is if you're a board member, you cannot get any financial benefit.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so if you're a board member, you can't ever take money from the RCD.
Oh, my gosh.
You'd have to be a contractor or staff. So I chose to become a staff member for the RCD.
Because in life, sometimes money is good.
Well, my wife likes that. I have 2 kids in high school that, we got to pay for college at some point. We are going to be, if we get these grants, we're going to be hiring people to contractors to do the work and also to administer the grants.
You know what, Gordon? We just ran out of time for this segment of the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.